Welcome to Discourses upon the Existence and Attributes of God, Volume 1 by Stephen Charnock. We are continuing to read at page 320 for this reading. This Reformation MP3 audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete online catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, DVDs, CDs, digital downloads, MP3s, and much more, great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all light literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now to SWRB's reading of the Existence and Attributes of God, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ. For he is the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by him. John 14, verse 6. Again, if his essence were mutable, he could not be perfectly blessed and fully rejoice in himself. If he changed for the better, he could not have an infinite pleasure in what he was before the change, because he was not infinitely blessed, and the pleasure of that state could not be of a higher kind than the state itself, or at least the apprehension of a happiness in it. If he changed for the worse, he could not have a pleasure in it after the change, for according to the diminution of his state, would be the decrease of his pleasure. His pleasure could not be infinite before the change if he changed for the better. It could not be infinite after the change if he changed for the worse. If he changed for the better, he would not have an infinite goodness of being before, and not having an infinite goodness of being, he would have a finite goodness of being, for there is no medium between finite and infinite. Then, though the change were for the better, yet being finite before, something would be still wanting to make him infinitely blessed, because being finite, he could not change to that which is infinite. For finite and infinite are extremes so distant that they can never pass into one another. That is, that which is finite should become infinite, or that which is infinite should become finite. So that, supposing him mutable, his essence in no state of change could furnish him with an infinite peace and blessedness. 3. Again, if God's essence be changed, he either increases or diminisheth. Whatsoever is changed doth either gain by receiving something larger and greater than it had in itself before, or gains nothing by being changed. If the former, then it receives more than itself, more than it had in itself before. The divine nature cannot be increased. For whatsoever receives anything than that what it had in itself before, must necessarily receive it from another, because nothing can give it to itself that which it hath not. But God cannot receive from another what he hath not already, because whatsoever other things possess is derived from him, and therefore contained in him, as a fountain contains a virtue in itself, which it conveys to the streams, so that God cannot gain anything. If a thing that is changed gain nothing by that change, it loses something of what it had before in itself, and this loss must be by itself or some other. God cannot receive any loss from anything in himself. He cannot will his own diminution that is repugnant to every nature. He may as well will his own destruction as his own decrease. Every decrease is a partial destruction. that it's impossible for God to die any kind of death, to have any resemblance of death, for he is immortal and only hath immortality. 1 Timothy 6:16. Therefore impossible to be diminished in any particle of his essence. Nor can he be diminished by anything in his own nature, because his infinite simplicity admits of nothing distinct from himself or contrary to himself. All decreases come from something contrary to the nature of that thing which doth decrease. Whatsoever is made less than itself was not truly unum, one and simple, because that which divides itself in separation was not the same in conjunction. Nor can he be diminished by any other without himself, because nothing is superior to God, nothing stronger than God which can oppress him. By whatsoever is changed is weaker than that which changes it, and sinks under a power it cannot successfully resist. Weakness belongs not to the deity. Nor, lastly, can God change from a state wherein he is to another state equal to the former, as men in some cases may do, for in passing from one state to another equal to it, something must be parted with which he had before, that some other thing may accrue to him as a recompense for that loss, to make him equal to what he was. This recompense, then, he had not before, though he had something equal to it. And in this case, it could not be said by God, I am that I am, but I am equal to what I was. For in this case, there would be a diminution, an increase, which, as we showed, cannot be in God. 4. Again, God is of himself, from no other. Natures which are made by God may increase, because they began to be. They may decrease, because they were made of nothing, and so tend to nothing. The condition of their original leads them to defect, and the power of their Creator brings them to increase. But God hath no original. He hath no defect, because he was not made of nothing. He hath no increase, because he had no beginning. He was before all things, and therefore depends upon no other thing which by its own change can bring any change upon him. That which is from itself cannot be changed, because it hath nothing before it, nothing more excellent than itself. But that which is from another, as its first cause and chief good, may be changed by that which was its sufficient cause and last end. 2. God is immutable in regard of knowledge. God hath known from all eternity all that which we can know, so that nothing is hid from him. He knows not at present any more than he hath known from eternity. And that which he knows now, he always knows. All things are open and naked before him. Hebrews 4, verse 13. A man is said to be changed in regard of knowledge when he knows that now which he did not know before, or knows that to be false now which he thought true before, or has something for the object of his understanding now which he had not before. But, 1. This would be repugnant to the wisdom and omniscience which belongs to the notions of a deity. That cannot be God that is not infinitely wise. That cannot be infinitely wise that is either ignorant of or mistaken in his apprehension of any one thing. If God be changed in knowledge, it must be for want of wisdom. All change of his nature in creatures implies this defect preceding or accompanying it. such a thought of God would have been unworthy of him, that is, only wise, that hath no mate for wisdom, 1 Timothy 1:17, none wise beside himself. If he knew that thing this day, which he knew not before, he would not be only wise being. For a being that did know everything at once might be conceived, and so a wiser being be apprehended by the mind of man. If God understood a thing at one time, which he did not at another, he would be changed from ignorance to knowledge. As if he could not do that this day, which he could do tomorrow, he would be changed from impotence to power. He could not be always omniscient, because there might be yet something still to come, which he yet knows not, though he may know all things that are past. What way soever you suppose a change, you must suppose a present or a past ignorance. If he be changed in his knowledge for the perfection of his understanding, he was ignorant before. If his understanding be impaired by the change, he is ignorant after it. 2. If God were changeable in his knowledge, it would make him unfit to be an object of trust to any rational creature. His revelations would want the due ground for entertainment if his understanding were changeable, for that might be revealed as truth now, which might prove false hereafter, and that is false now, which hereafter might prove true, and so God would be an unfit object of obedience in regard of his precepts, and an unfit object of confidence in regard of his promises. For if he be changeable in knowledge, he is defective in knowledge, and might promise that now which he would know afterwards was unfit to be promised, and therefore unfit to be performed. It would make him an incompetent object of dread in regard of his threatenings, for he might threaten that now which he might know hereafter was not fit or just to be inflicted. A changeable mind and understanding cannot make a due and right judgment of things to be done and things to be avoided, and no wise man would judge it reasonable to trust a weak and flitting person. God must needs be unchangeable in his knowledge. But as the schoolmen say, that as the sun always shines, so God always knows. As the sun never ceases to shine, so God never ceaseth to know. Nothing can be hid from the vast compass of his understanding, no more than anything can shelter itself without the verge of his power. This farther appears in that first. God knows by his own essence. He does not know as we do by habits, qualities, species, whereby we may be mistaken at one time and rectified at another. He hath not an understanding distinct from his essence as we have, but being the most simple being, his understanding is his essence. And as from the infiniteness of his essence, we conclude the infiniteness of his understanding, so from the unchangeableness of his essence, we may justly conclude the unchangeableness of his knowledge. Since, therefore, God is without all composition, and his understanding is not distinct from his essence, so he knows. He knows by his essence, and there can then be no more mutability in his knowledge than there can be in his essence. And if there were any in that, he could not be God, because he would have the property of a creature. If his understanding then be his essence, his knowledge is as necessary, as unchangeable as his essence. As his essence eminently contains all perfections in itself, so his understanding comprehends all things past, present, and future in itself. If his understanding and his essence were not one and the same, he were not simple, but compounded. If compounded, he would consist of parts. If he consisted of parts, He would not be an independent being, and so would not be God. Second, God knows all things by an intuitive act. As there is no succession in his being, so that he is one thing now and another thing hereafter, so there is no succession in his knowledge. He knows things that are successive before their existence and succession by one single act of intuition. By one cast of his eye, all things future are present to him in regard of his eternity and omnipresence. So that though there is a change and variation in the things known, yet his knowledge of them and their several changes in nature is invariable and unalterable. As imagine a creature that could see with his eye at one glance the whole compass of the heavens by sending out beams from his eye without receiving any species from them, he would see the whole heavens uniformly, this part now in the east and then in the west, without any change in his eye, for he sees every part and every motion together. And though that great body varies and whirls about and is in continual agitation, his eye remains steadfast, suffers no change, beholds all their motions at once and by one glance. God knows all things from eternity, and therefore perpetually knows them. The reason is because the divine knowledge is infinite, and therefore comprehends all knowable truths at once. An eternal knowledge comprehends in itself all time, and beholds past and present in the same manner, and therefore his knowledge is immutable. By one simple knowledge, he considers the infinite spaces of past and future. Third, God's knowledge and will is a cause of all things and their successions. There can be no pretense of any changeableness of knowledge in God. But in this case, before things come to pass, he knows that they will come to pass. After they have come to pass, he knows that they are past and slide away. This would be something in the succession of things. Things were the cause of divine knowledge, as it is our knowledge. But on the contrary, the divine knowledge and will is the cause of the succession of them. God doth know creatures because they are. God does not know creatures because they are, but they are because he knows them. All his works were known to him from the beginning of the world, Acts 15:18. All his works were not known to him if the events of all those works were not also known to him. If they were not known to him, how should he make them? He could not do anything ignorantly. He made them then after he knew them, and did not know them after he made them. His knowledge of them made a change in them. Their existence made no change in his knowledge. He knew them when they were created, in the same manner that he knew them after they were created, before they were brought into act, as well as after they were brought into act. Before they were made, they were and were not. They were in the knowledge of God when they were not in their own nature. God did not receive his knowledge from their existence, but his knowledge and will acted upon them to bring them into being. Fourth, therefore the distinction of past and future makes no change in the knowledge of God. When a thing is past, God hath no more distinct knowledge of it after it is past than he had when it was to come. All things were all in their circumstances and of past, present, and to come, seen by his understanding, as they were determined by his will. Besides, to know a day, to be past or future, is only to know the state of that day in itself, and to know its relation to that which follows, and that which went before. This day wherein we are, if we consider it in the state wherein it was yesterday, it was to come, it was future. But if we consider it in that state wherein it will be tomorrow, we understand it as past. This in man cannot be said to be a different knowledge of the thing itself, but only of the circumstance attending a thing and the different relation of it. As I see the sun this day, I know it is up yesterday. It was up yesterday. I know it will be up tomorrow. My knowledge of the sun is the same. If there be any change, it is in the sun, not in my knowledge. Only I apply my knowledge to such particular circumstances. How much more must the knowledge of those things in God be unchangeable? Who knows all those states, conditions, and circumstances most perfectly from eternity, wherein there is no succession, no past or future, and therefore will know them from forever? He always beholds the same thing. He sees, indeed, succession in things, and he sees a thing to be past, which was future. As from eternity, he saw Adam as existing in such a time. In the first time he saw that he would be. In the following time he saw that he had been. For this he knew from eternity. This he knew in the same manner. Though there was a variation in Adam, yet there was no variation in God's knowledge of him in all his states. Though Adam was not present to himself, yet in all his states he was present to God's eternity. Fifth, consider that the knowledge of God, in regard of the manner of it, as well as the objects, is incomprehensible to a finite creature. So that though we cannot arrive to a full understanding of the manner of God's knowledge, yet we must conceive so of it as to remove all imperfection from him in it. And since it is an imperfection to be changeable, we must remove that from God. The knowledge of God about things past, present, and future must be inconceivably above ours. His understanding is infinite. Psalm 147:5. There is no number of it. It can no more be calculated or drawn into account by us than infinite spaces, which have no bounds and limits, can be measured by us. We can no more arrive, even in heaven, to a comprehensive understanding of the manner of his knowledge than of the infinite glory of his essence. We may as well comprehend one as the other. This we must conclude, that God, being not a body, doth not see one thing with eyes and another thing with mind as we do, but being a spirit, he sees and knows only with mind, and his mind is himself, and is as unchangeable as himself. And therefore, as he is not now another thing than what he was, so he knows not anything now in another manner than as he knew it from eternity. He sees all things in the glass of his own essence. As therefore the glass doth not vary, so neither doth his vision. 3. God is unchangeable in regard of his will and purpose. A change in his purpose is when a man determines to do that now, which before he determined not to do, or to do the contrary. When a man hates that thing which he loved, he begins to love that which he before hated. When the will is changed, a man begins to will that which he willed not before, and ceaseth to will that which he willed before. But whatsoever God hath decreed is immutable. Whatsoever God hath promised shall be accomplished. The word that goes forth of his mouth shall not return to him void, but it shall accomplish that which he pleaseth. Isaiah 55:11. Whatsoever he purposes, he will do. Isaiah 46:11 and Numbers 23:19. His decrees are therefore called mountains of brass. Zechariah 6:1. Brass as having substance and solidity. Mountains as being immovable, not only by any creature, but by himself, because they stand upon the basis of infallible wisdom and supported by uncontrollable power. From this immutability of his will, published to man, there could be no release from the severity of the law without satisfaction made by the death of a mediator, since it was the unalterable will of God that death should be the wages of sin. And from this immutable will it was that the length of time from the first promise of the Redeemer to his mission and the daily provocations of men altered not his purpose for the accomplishment of it in the fullness of that time he had resolved upon. Nor did the wickedness of former ages hinder the addition of several promises as buttresses to the first. To make this out, consider 1. The will of God is the same with his essence. If God had a will distinct from his essence, he would not be the most simple being. God hath not a faculty of will distinct from himself, as his understanding is nothing else but Deus intelligence, God understanding. So his will is nothing else but Deus volens, God willing. Being, therefore, the essence of God, though it is considered according to our weakness as a faculty, it is as his understanding and wisdom, eternal and immutable, and can no more be changed from than his essence. The immutability of the divine counsel depends upon that of his essence. He is the Lord Jehovah. Therefore he is true to his word, Malachi 3:6 and Isaiah 43:13. Yea, before the day I am he, and there is none that can deliver out of my hand. He is the same, immutable in his essence, therefore irresistible in his power. 2. There is a concurrence of God's will and understanding in everything. As his knowledge is eternal, so is his purpose. Things created had not been known to be, had not God resolved them to be, the act of his will. The existence of anything supposes an act of his will. Again, as God knows all things by one simple vision of his understanding, so he wills all things by one act of volition. Therefore, the purpose of God in the Scripture is not expressed by counsels in the plural number, but counsel, showing that all the purposes of God are not various, but as one will, branching itself out into many acts towards the creature, but all knit in one root, all links of one chain. Whatsoever is eternal is immutable. As his knowledge is eternal, and therefore immutable, so is his will. He wills or nills nothing to be in time, but what he willed and nills from eternity. If he willed in time that he willed not from eternity, then he would know that in time, which he knew not from eternity. For God knows nothing future, but as his will orders it to be future, and in time to be brought into being. 3. There can be no reason for any change in the will of God. When men change in their minds, it must be for want of foresight, because they could not foresee all the rubs and bars which might suddenly offer themselves, which if they had foreseen, they would not have taken such measures. Hence men often will that which they afterwards wish they had not willed, when they come to understand it clearer, and see that to be injurious to them, which they thought to be good for them. Or else the change proceeds from a natural instability without any just cause, and an easiness to be drawn into that which is unrighteous. Or else it proceeds from a want of power when men take new counsels, because they are invincibly hindered from executing the old. But none of those can be in God. First, it cannot be for want of foresight. What can be wanting to an infinite understanding? How can an unknown event defeat his purpose, since nothing happens in the world but what he wills to effect, or wills to permit, and therefore all future events are present with him? Besides, it does not consist with God's wisdom to resolve anything but upon the highest reason, and which is what is the highest and infinite reason cannot be unalterable in itself, for there can be no reason and wisdom higher than the highest. All God's purposes are not bare acts of will, but acts of counsel. He works all things according to the counsel of his own will. Ephesians 1:11. And he doth not say so much that is his will, as that his counsel shall stand. Isaiah 46:10. It stands because it is counsel, and the immutability of a promise is called the immutability of his counsel. Hebrews 6:17. As being introduced and settled by the most perfect wisdom, and therefore be carried on to a full and complete execution, his purpose, then, cannot be changed for want of foresight, for this would be a charge of weakness. Second, nor can it proceed from a natural instability of his will, or an easiness to be drawn to that which is unrighteous. If his will should not adhere to his counsel, it is because it is not fit to be followed, or because it will not follow it. If not fit to be followed, it is a reflection upon his wisdom. If it be established, and he will not follow it, there is a contrariety in God, as there is in a fallen creature, will against wisdom. That cannot be in God, which he hates in a creature, this, the disorder of faculties and being out of their due place. The righteousness of God is like a great mountain. Psalm 36:6. The rectitude of his nature is as immovable in itself as all the mountains in the world are by the strength of man. He is not as a man that he should repent or lie. Numbers 23:19. Who often changes out of a perversity of will, as well as want of wisdom to foresee, or want of ability to perform. His eternal purpose must either be righteous or unrighteous. If righteous and holy, he would become unholy by the change. If not righteous nor holy, then he was unrighteous before the change. Which way soever it falls, it would reflect upon the righteousness of God, which is a blasphemous imagination. If God did change his purpose, it must be either for the better, then the counsel of God was bad before, or for the worse, then he was not wise and good before. Third, nor can it be for want of strength. Who hath power to control him? Not all the combined devices and endeavours of men can make the counsel of God to totter. Proverbs 19:21. There are many devices in man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. That, and that only shall stand. Man hath a power to devise and imagine, but no power to effect and execute of himself. God wants no more power to effect what he will, then he wants understanding to know what is fit. Well then, since God wanted not wisdom to frame his decrees, nor holiness to regulate them, nor power to affect them, what should make him change them? Since there can be no reason superior to his, no event unforeseen by him, no holiness comparable to his, no unrighteousness found in him, no power equal to his, to put a rub in his way. Fourth, though the will of God be immutable, it is not to be understood so as that the things themselves so willed are immutable. Nor will the immutability of the things willed by him follow upon the unchangeableness of his will in willing them. Though God be firm in willing them, yet he does not will that they should always be. God did not perpetually will the doing those things which he once decreed to be done. He decreed that Christ should suffer, but he did not decree that Christ should always suffer. So he willed the Mosaical rites for a time, but he did not will that they should always continue. he willed that they should endure only for a time. And when the time came for their ceasing, God had been mutable if he had not put an end to them, because his will had fixed such a period. So that the changing of those things which he had once appointed to be practiced is so far from charging God with changeableness that God would be mutable if he did not take them away, since he decreed as well as their abolition at such a time as their continuance till such a time. So that the removal of them was pursuant to his unchangeable will and decree. If God had decreed that such laws should always continue, and afterwards changed that decree, and resolved the abrogation of them, then indeed God had been mutable. He had rescinded one decree from another. He had then seen an error in his first resolve, and there must be some weakness in his reason and wisdom whereon it was grounded. But he was not so here. For the change of those laws is so far from slurring God with any mutability that the very change of them is no other than the issue of his eternal decree. For from eternity he purposed in himself to change this or that dispensation, though he did decree to bring such a dispensation into the world. The decree itself was eternal and immutable. But the thing decreed was temporary and mutable. As a decree from eternity did not make the thing decreed to be eternal, so neither doth the immutability of the decree render the thing so decreed to be immutable. As, for example, God decreed from all eternity to create the world. The eternity of this decree did not make the world to be in being and actually created from eternity, so God decreed immutably that the world so created should continue for such a time. The decree is mutable if the world perish at that time, and would not be immutable if the world did endure beyond that time that God had fixed for the duration of it. As when a prince orders a man's remaining in prison for so many days. If he be prevailed with to give him a delivery before those days, or to continue him in custody for the same crime after those days, his order is changed. But if he orders the delivery of him just at that time, to which he had before decreed that he should continue in prison, the purpose and order of the prince remains firm. And the change in the state of the prisoner is the fruit of that firm and fixed resolution. So that we must distinguish between the person decreeing, the decree itself, and the thing decreed. The person decreeing, this God, is in himself immutable, and the decree is mutable. But the thing decreed may be mutable. And if it were not changed according to the first purpose, it would argue the decree itself to be changed. For while a man wills that this may be done now, and another thing done afterwards, the same will remains. And though there be a change in the effects, there is no change in the will. Fifth. The immutability of God's will does not infringe the liberty of it. The liberty of God's will consists with the necessity of continuing his purpose. God is necessarily good, immutably good, yet he is freely so and would not be otherwise than what he is. God was free in his first purpose, and purposing this or that by an infallible and unerring wisdom, it would be a weakness to change the purpose. But indeed, the liberty of God's will does not seem so much to consist in an indifferency to this or that, as in an independency on anything without himself. His will was free because it did not depend upon the objects about which his will was conversant. To be immutably good is no point of imperfection, but the height of perfection. 4. as God is unchangeable in regard of essence, knowledge, purpose, so he is unchangeable in regard of place. He cannot be changed in time, because he is eternity. He cannot be changed in place, because he hath ubiquity. He is eternal, therefore cannot be changed in time. He is omnipresent, therefore cannot be changed in place. He doth not begin to be in one place, wherein he was not before, or cease to be in a place, wherein he was before. He that fills every place in heaven and earth cannot change place. He cannot leave one to possess another that is equally in regard of his essence in all. He fills heaven and earth. Jeremiah 23:24. The heavens that are not subject to those changes to which sublunary bodies are subject, they are not diminished in quantity or quality, yet they are always changing place in regard of their motion. No part of them doth always continue in the same point. But God hath no change of his nature, because he is most inward in everything. He is substantially in all spaces, real and imaginary. There is no part of the world which he doth not fill. No place can be imagined where he doth not exist. Suppose a million of worlds above and about this, encircling one another. His essence would be in every part and point of those worlds, because it is indivisible. It cannot be divided, nor can it be contained within those created limits of millions of worlds. When the most soaring and best coining fancy hath run through all creatures to the highest sphere of the heavens, and imagined one world after another, still it can fancy no more. None of these, nor all of these, can contain God, for the heaven of heavens cannot contain him. 1 Kings 8:27. He is higher than heaven, deeper than hell. Job 11:8. And possesses infinite imaginary spaces beyond created limits. He hath no cause of being, can have no limits of being, and though by creation he began to be in the world, yet he did not begin to be where the world is, but was in the same imaginary space from all eternity, for he were always in himself by his own eternal ubi. Therefore observe, that when God is said to draw near to us, when we draw near to him, James 4:8, it is not by local motion or change of place, but by special and spiritual influences, by exciting and supporting grace. As we ordinarily say, the Son is come into the house, when yet it remains in its place and order in the heavens, because the beams pierce through the windows and lighten the room, so when God is said to come down or descend, Genesis 11:5, Exodus 34:5, is not by change of place, but a change of outward acts, when he puts forth himself in a ways of fresh mercy or new judgments, in the effluxes of his love or the flames of his wrath. When good men feel the warm beams of his grace refreshing them, or wicked men feel the hot coals of his anger scorching them, God's drawing near to us is not so much his coming to us as his drawing us to him, as when watermen pull a rope that is in one end fastened to the shore and the other end to the vessel. The shore is immovable, yet it seems to the eye to come to them, but they really move to the shore. God is an immovable rock. We are floating and uncertain creatures. While he seems to approach to us, he doth not really make us approach to him. He comes not to us by any change of place himself, but draws us to him by a change of mind, will, and affections in us. 2. The second thing propounded is the reasons to prove God immutable. The heathens acknowledged God to be so. Plato and Pythagoreans called God, or the stable good principle, the evil principle, another thing changeable. one thing one time, and another thing another time. Daniel 6:26. He is the living God and steadfast forever. 1. The name Jehovah signifies this attribute. Exodus 3:14. I am that I am. I am hath sent me to you. It signifies his immutability as well as eternity. I am signifies his eternity, that, or the same that I am, his immutability. As it respects the essence of God, it signifies his unchangeable being from eternity to eternity. As it respects the creature, it signifies his constancy in his counsels and promises, which spring from no other cause but the unchangeableness of his nature. The reason why men stand not to their covenant is because they are not always the same. I am, that is, I am the same before the creation of the world and since the creation of the world, before the entrance of sin and since the entrance of sin, before their being in, going into Egypt and while they remain in Egypt. The name Jehovah bears, according to the grammatical order, a mark of God's unchangeableness. It never hath anything added to it, nor anything taken from it. It hath no plural number, nor affixes, a custom peculiar to the Eastern languages. It never changes its letters, as other words do. That only is a true being, which hath not only an eternal existence, but stability in it. That is not truly a being, but never remains in the same state. All things that are changed cease to be what they were and begin to be what they were not, and therefore cannot have the title truly applied to them. They are indeed, but like a river in a continual flux, that no man ever sees the same, let his eye be fixed upon one place of it. The water he sees glides away, and that which he saw not succeeds in its place. Let him take his eye off but for the least moment, and fix it there again, and he sees not the same that he saw before. All sensible things are in a perpetual stream. That which is sometimes this, and sometimes that, is not, because it's not always the same. Whatsoever is changed is something now which it was not always. But of God it is said, I am, which could not be if he were changeable. For it may be said of him, he is not, as well as he is, because he is not what he was. If we say not of him, he was, nor will he be, but only he is. Whence should any change arrive? How must invincible remain the same of his nature, affections, knowledge, and will? It cannot be said it was, as if it were not now in him, or it shall be, or it were not yet in him. But he is, because he doth not only exist, but doth always exist the same. I am, that is, I receive from no other than I am in myself. He depends upon no other in his essence, knowledge, purposes, and therefore I have no changing power over him. 2. If God were changeable, he could not be the most perfect being. God is the most perfect being and possesses in himself infinite and essential goodness. Matthew 5:48. Your heavenly Father is perfect. If he could change from that perfection, he were not the highest exemplar and copy for us to write after. If God does change, it must be either to a greater perfection than he had before, or to a less. If he changes to acquire a perfection he had not, then he was not before the most excellent being. Necessarily, he was not what he might be. There was a defect in him, and a privation of that which is better than what he had and was. And then he was not always the best, and so were not always God. being not always God could never be God, for to begin to be God is against the notion of God, not to be a less perfection than he had. That were to be changed to be an imperfection, and to lose a perfection which he possessed before, and cease to be the best being, for he would lose some good which he had, and acquire some evil which he was free from before. So that the sovereign perfection of God is an invincible bar to any change in him. For which way soever you cast it for a change, his supreme excellency is impaired and nulled by it. For in all change there is something from which a thing is changed, and something to which it is changed, so that on the one part there is less of what it had, and on the other part there is an acquisition of what it had not. If, to the better, he was not perfect, and so was not God, if to the worse, he will not be perfect, and so be no longer God after that change. If God be changed, his change must be voluntary or necessary. If voluntary, he then intends the change for the better, and choose it to be acquire a perfection by it. The will must be carried out to anything under the notion of some goodness in that which it desires. Since good is the object of the desire and will of the creature, evil cannot be the object and desire and will of the Creator. And if he should be changed for the worse, when he did really intend the better, it would speak a defect of wisdom and a mistake of that for good, which was evil and imperfect in itself. And if it be for the better, it must be a motion or change for something without himself. That which he desireth is not possessed by himself, but by some other. There is then some good without him and above him, which is the end in this change. For nothing acts but for some end, and that end is within itself or without itself. If the end for which God changes be without itself, himself, then there isn't something better than himself. Besides, if he were voluntarily changed for the better, why did he not change before? If it were for want of power, he had the imperfection of weakness. If for want of knowledge, or what was the best good, he had the imperfection of wisdom. He was ignorant of his own happiness. If he had both wisdom to know it, and power to effect it, it must be for want of will. For then wanted that love to himself, and his own glory, which is necessary in the Supreme Being. Voluntarily, he could not be changed for the worse. He could not be such an enemy to his own glory. There is nothing but would hinder its own imperfection and becoming worse. Necessarily, he could not be changed. For that necessity must arise from himself, and then the difficulties spoken of before will recur, or it must arise from another. He cannot be bettered by another, because nothing hath any good but what he hath received from the hands of his bounty, and that without loss to himself, nor made worse. If anything made him worse, it would be sin, but that cannot touch his essence or obscure his glory, but in the design and nature of the sin itself. Job 35:6-7. If thou sinnest, what dost thou against him? Or if thy transgressions be multiplied, what dost thou unto him? If thou be righteous, what givest thou him? Or what receives he at thy hand? He hath no addition by the service of man, no more than the sun hath of light by multitude of torches kindled on the earth, nor any more impair by the sins of men than the light of the sun hath by at men shooting arrows against it. 3. God were not the most simple being if he were not immutable. There is in everything that is mutable a composition either essential or accidental, and in all changes something of the thing changed remains, and something of it ceaseth and is done away. As for example, in an accidental change If a white wall be made black, it loses its white colour. But the wall itself, which was the subject of that colour, remains and loses nothing of its substance. Likewise, in a substantial change, as when wood is burnt, the substantial part of wood is lost. The earthly part is changed into ashes, and the airy part ascends in smoke, and the watery part is changed into air by the fire. There is no annihilation of it, but a resolution of it into those parts whereof it was compounded. And this change doth evidence that it was compounded of several parts distinct from one another. If there were any change in God, it is by separating something from him, or adding something to him. If by separating something from him, then he was compounded of something distinct from himself. For if it were not distinct from himself, it could not be separated from him without loss of his being. If by adding anything to him, then it is a compounding of him, either substantially or accidentally. Mutability is absolutely inconsistent with simplicity, whether the change come from an internal or external principle. If a change be wrought by something without, it supposes either contrary or various parts in the thing so changed, whereof it doth consist. If it be wrought by anything within, it supposes that the thing so changed doth consist of one part that doth change it, and another part that is changed, and so it would not be a simple being. If God could be changed by anything within himself, all in God would not be God. His essence would depend upon some parts, whereas some would be superior to others. If one part were able to change or destroy another, that which doth change would be God, and that which is changed would not be God. So God would be made up of a deity and a non-deity, and a part of God would depend upon God. Part would be dependent, and part would be independent. Part would be mutable, and part immutable. So that mutability is against the notion of God's independency as well as his simplicity. God is the most simple being, for that which is first in nature, having nothing beyond it, cannot by any means be thought to be compounded. For whatsoever is so, depends upon the parts whereof it is compounded, and so it is not the first being. Now God, being infinitely simple, hath nothing in himself which is not himself, and therefore cannot will any change in himself, he being his own essence and existence. 4. God were not eternal if he were mutable. In all change there is something that perisheth, either substantially or accidentally. All change is a kind of death, or imitation of death. That which was, dies, and begins to be what he was not. The soul of man, though it ceases not to be and exist, yet when it ceases to be in quality what it was, is said to die. Adam died when he changed from integrity to corruption, though both his body and soul were in being, Genesis 2:17. And the soul of a regenerate man is said to die to sin when it is changed from sin to grace, Romans 6:11. In all change there is a resemblance of death. So the notion of mutability is against the eternity of God. If anything be acquired by a change, then that which is acquired was not from eternity, and so he was not wholly eternal. If anything be lost, which was from eternity, he is not wholly everlasting. If he did decrease by the change, something in him which had no beginning would have no end. If he did increase by the change, something in him would have a beginning that might have no end. What is changed doth not remain. And what doth not remain is not eternal. Though God always remains in regard of his existence, he would be immortal and live always, yet if he should suffer any change, he could not properly be eternal, because he would not always be the same, and would not in every part be eternal. For all change is finished in time, one moment preceding, another moment following, but that which is before time cannot be changed by time. God cannot be eternally what he was. That is, he cannot have a true eternity if he had a new knowledge, a new purpose, a new essence. If he was sometimes this and sometimes that, sometimes know this and sometimes know that, sometimes purpose this and afterwards have a new purpose, he would be partly temporary and partly eternal, not truly and universally eternal. He that hath anything of newness hath not properly and truly an entire eternity. Again, by the same reason that God could be in the least cease to be what he was, he might also cease wholly to be, and by reason can be rendered why God might not cease wholly to be, as well as cease to be entirely and uniformly what he was. All changeableness implies a corruptibility. 5. If God were changeable, he were not infinite and almighty. All change ends in addition or diminution. If anything be added, he was not infinite before. If anything be diminished, he was not infinite after. All change implies bounds and limits to that which is changed. But God is infinite. His greatness is unsearchable. Who can add number to number without any end, and can conceive of an infinite number? Yet the greatness of God is beyond all our conceptions. But if there could be any change in his greatness for the better, it would not be unsearchable before that change. Yet for the worse, it would not be unsearchable after that change. Whatsoever hath limits and is changeable is conceivable and searchable. But God is not only not known, but impossible in his own nature to be known and searched out, and therefore impossible to have any diminution in his nature. All that which is changed arrives to something which it was not before, or ceases in part to be what it was before. He would not also be almighty. What is omnipotent cannot be made worse, for to be made worse is in part to be corrupted. If he be made better, he were not almighty before. Something of power was wanting to him. If there should be any change, it must proceed from himself or from another. If from himself, it would be an ability to preserve himself in the perfection of his nature. If from another, he would be inferior in strength, knowledge, and power to that which changes him, either in his nature, knowledge, or will, in both an inability in him to continue the same, or an inability in him to resist the power of another. 6. The world could not be ordered and governed by some principle or being which was immutable. Principles are always more fixed and stable than things which proceed from those principles. And this is true both in morals and naturals. Principles and conscience, whereby men are governed, remain firmly engraven in their minds. The root lies firmly in the earth, while branches are shaken with the wind. The heavens, the cause of generation, are more firm and stable than those things which are wrought by their influence. All things in the world are moved by some power and virtue which is stable, and unless it were so, no order would be observed in motion, no motion could be regularly continued. He could not be in a full satisfaction to the infinite desire of the souls of his people. Nothing can truly satisfy the soul of man but rest, and nothing can give it rest but that which is perfect and immutably perfect, for else it would be subject to those agitations and variations which the being it depends upon is subject to. The principle of all things must be immutable, which is described by some by a unity, the principle of a number, wherein there is a resemblance of God's unchangeableness. A unit is not variable, it continues in its own nature, immutably a unit. It never varies from itself, it cannot be changed from itself, but it is, as it were, so omnipotent towards others that it changes all numbers. If you add any number, it is the beginning of that number, but the unit is not increased by it. A new number arises from the addition, but the unit still remains the same and adds value to other figures, but receives none from them. 3. The third thing to speak to is that immutability is proper to God and incommunicable to any creature. Mutability is natural to every creature as a creature, and immutability is the sole perfection of God. He only is infinite wisdom, able to foreknow future events. He only is infinitely powerful, able to call forth all means to effect, so that wanting neither wisdom to contrive, nor strength to execute, he cannot alter his counsel. None being above him, nothing in him contrary to him, and being defective in no blessedness and perfection, he cannot vary in his essence and nature. Had not immutability, as well as eternity, been a proper property solely pertaining to the divine nature, as well as creative power and eternal duration, the apostles' argument to prove Christ to be God from his perpetual sameness had come short of any convincing strength. These words of the text he applies to Christ, Hebrews 1:10-12. They shall be changed, but thou art the same. There had been no strength in the reason, if immutability by nature did belong to any creature. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan Reform books, CDs and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, AB, Canada, T6L3T5. If you do not have a web connection, please request a free printed catalogue. If you do have a web connection and would like to be added to our email list, please send an email to add@swrb.com or swrb@swrb.com with the word add in the subject line. SWRB's email list is a double opt-in list, so once you've sent us your email address, you will be asked by email to confirm that you want to join our list using the email address you have supplied. Your email information will be kept confidential, and you can easily remove yourself from our email list by simply emailing us at swrb@swrb.com with the word remove in the subject line. Once you are on our email list, you will be alerted to all the new free Reformation resources, free MP3s, free electronic books and texts, etc. SWRB makes available on the web, as well as at times, to our best discounts and super specials. We also encourage you to reproduce this audio resource and to pass it on to your friends, but we only authorize this as long as the full contents of the message, including the header and trailer, is not altered in any way,
and as long as the audio file or cassette is given away for free. Thank you again for listening to this SWRB reading, and remember that Isaiah 26:3 states, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." 2 Corinthians 13:11 concludes, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you."